National Gallery Podcast.
This is the National Gallery Podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. This month, we start with one of the best-loved paintings in the gallery, Rembrandt's extraordinary 17th-century masterpiece, Belshazzar's Feast. The artist's source for the work is a story in the Old Testament book of Daniel. It tells of a banquet given by Belshazzar, king of Babylon, for his nobles, during which a divine hand appears and writes a disturbing message for the king on the wall. Art historian Jackie Ansell took Cathy Fitzgerald to see how Rembrandt portrays the dramatic repercussions of the mysterious apparition.
So in this dramatic painting, we're plunged right into the centre of the action. You get a sense that they've been in the middle of a feast. You've got things on the table, luscious fruits. When all of a sudden, the writing's appeared on the wall and you get Belshazzar's reaction to it. He's putting his hand up to protect himself. And as he does that, a woman is entering. And on the right-hand side, you see her putting her hand up to protect herself from his action. And as she does so, the goblet that she's holding is spilling liquid all over her sleeve. So what looks like fur on her sleeve is actually the liquid spilling. So you get this great sense of immediacy.
And so what does this mystical writing actually say?
Well, I think the writing has clearly been written from right to left, because you can see the hand that's doing the writing, with nothing but its finger, finishing off that final character in the bottom left-hand corner. The story goes that he didn't know what it said, so he offered the gold chain from around his neck to anybody who could translate that writing. And the only person who could do that was Daniel. And Daniel said that the writing said, "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. You have been weighed in the balance and found wanting. Tomorrow you shall die, and your kingdom be divided up between the Medes and the Persians." So even though he doesn't understand exactly what the writing says, you can see from his body language and from his facial expression that he knows it's pretty bad news, and in fact it's the worst news you can possibly get.
And Belshazzar is being punished for something not that he did, but that his father did, isn't he?
Yes, his father had stolen gold from the temple, and I think Rembrandt brings this out beautifully, because you've got the gold glistening throughout this painting. Not only have you got the gold goblets that we mentioned earlier, but you've also got this great big platter that seems to have been overturned. So you can imagine that these are exactly the kind of objects that may have been stolen from a temple. So it's extremely sacrilegious to be eating from them. And the other thing, of course, that Rembrandt absolutely stresses is that this is a man who loves gold. I mean, look at that gold-encrusted robe covered in diamonds. The way in which the crown is just teetering on the top of that turban. You can see the gold and the egret feather.
Yeah, it's a very sensuous painting, isn't it? Given that it's a work about mystical writing, it's actually really quite earthy, with not just his robes, but the food on the table.
Yes, and I suppose that's part of the notion, isn't it, of the appeal to our baser instincts, maybe. If you look closely at the way in which it's painted, as well as what's being depicted, you've got this luscious, thick impasto paint. So the gold-encrusted, fur-lined robe is absolutely etched out of this paint, this thick, gooey, luscious paint. There's this three-dimensionality to the painting, which, of course, Rembrandt is absolutely famous for, one of his detractors saying he painted with a house painter's brush. But it's this three-dimensionality that gives it this very expressive quality. And you find yourself almost lusting after the gold objects in the painting. So we're almost guilty of the sin that's being condemned here.
Jackie Ansell talking about Belshazzar's Feast, on display in Room 24. And now to our exhibition, Vermeer and Music, the Art of Love and Leisure. This show explores the fascinating role music played in 17th century Dutch painting. On certain days, as gallery goers look at the pictures, musicians from the Academy of Ancient Music, an orchestra that performs Baroque and classical music on period instruments, play repertoire that 17th century Dutch audiences would have known and loved. Leah Caribbean visited the exhibition to meet harpsichordist Julian Perkins and viola da gamba player Reiko Ichise, and began by asking about their instruments. What, for instance, is a viola da gamba?
If I'm carrying this in the case, many people think it's a cello. Just a sort of outside size, it looks like cello, but it's nothing to do with cello. Viola da gamba is an Italian name for this type of instrument. It's called viol in English, and I'm playing bass viol. And can I ask, what does it sound like? What does it sound like when you play it?
Yes, I could play... I can play some chord or... So, compared to, let's say, modern instrument, it has very different colour of the sound, and they regarded this was the closest instrument to the voice.
And I was wondering, Julian, I mean, with regard to the harpsichord in my mind has always been a slightly strident instrument.
Well, the main difference, of course, between the piano and the harpsichord is that with the piano, the strings are hit by a little hammer, whereas with all harpsichords, you get a plectro which plucks the strings. You get a very sparky sound like this.
And a lot of the instruments that we see in the pictures and also the instruments that you play are very beautiful things. They're often quite highly decorated. And in particular, Julian, I noticed that harpsichords seem to be covered in writing. What's all that about?
That's right. You often get Latin mottos on instruments, and sometimes it was like a moral remedy for what was considered the vanities of music. And I suppose if one had mottos today, it would be something like, you know, keep calm and carry on. But my favourite maxims in this exhibition is a lovely picture by Jan Steen of a young woman playing a harpsichord to a young man. And the virtuous woman has a motto on the foreboard, which is just below the keyboard, where it says Soli Deo Gloria, solely for the glory of God, which I think emphasises her virtuous principles. And then this rather leering man over her has got this other motto on another part of the instrument, which says Acta Virum Probant, actions prove man. And you rarely get such mottos on instruments like that for a specific purpose, but I love that sort of innuendo in the picture. It's great.
And so many of the pictures show people playing in duets, in small, domestic, intimate spaces. And I was wondering whether, when you look at the works, you share a feeling of sort of, a fellow feeling when you look at the people inside the paintings. Does this seem a right sort of environment, a small environment for your music?
Absolutely. It's been nice doing these concerts in an intimate space because we feel there's an interaction with the audience. And I think it's valuable to point out that at this time, of course, the idea of a modern concert would have been anathema to Vermeer and his contemporaries, because what we see is vignettes of people in their front rooms making music at home. So when we've given concerts, I've even encouraged the audience to go home and maybe sing madrigals after dinner so they get the sense of, ensemble music. And sometimes it's good, because someone who's never heard a harpsichord before or a gamba, you realise that it's quite a privilege to be initiating them to this style of music.
Reiko Ichase and Julian Perkins, playing part of Johannes Schenk's Time and Art Exercises. Recording courtesy of InTune, as heard on BBC Radio 3. You can hear performers from the Academy of Ancient Music play live in the exhibition every Thursday and Saturday from 11 a.m. and Friday from 3 p.m. But please do note, capacity's limited. Alternatively, you can hear them talk and perform on the exhibition's audio guide and accompanying film. To book tickets and find out more about the exhibition, visit www.nationalgallery.org.uk. Tis the festival season, and if you've been out in the sun or rain at any events this year, you might have caught a Titian in an unusual setting. Not the real thing, of course, mud and masterpieces don't mix, but instead a magical mobile world hung with stars and replicas of the great artist's paintings, created courtesy of a unique partnership with the Art Fund. Cathy Fitzgerald travelled to the Buxton Festival to catch up with the Titian Experience and its National Gallery host for the day, art historian Linda Bolton.
Oh, this is paradise. It's utopia. Children are playing, people are licking ice creams, sun out, summer is finally here, and the little train is passing by with delighted passengers. Oh, water plashes over fountains and over brook.
And we're here with the Titian Experience.
We're part of the festival. We're bringing the National Gallery to the festival. We're hoping that people step up into the van and find themselves inside, well, extraordinary place. They're inside a little cinema with the cinema seats, with the screen. And bit by bit by bit, we hope to engage with them and talk about Titian's great paintings.
And you called it a van, but that's a bit of an understatement, isn't it?
It was an understatement. It is a fantastic creation. On one side, it looks like a miniature classical gazebo. It's got a pediment, it's got fluted pilasters. It gives you a bit of an idea, perhaps, of what's going to be behind that space that you enter.
And which paintings are you focusing on here?
We're focusing on the paintings that Titian made for Philip II of Spain. He made six poesies, poetic works. But in particular, we're looking at Diana and Callisto, a painting that was purchased for the nation. How do you tell a story, a static story? How do you tell all the story in one take, as it were? Well, you put information in, you paint gesture, you leave it to the viewer to read, be it an outraged goddess or a hapless nymph, the humiliation, the imperial gesture, it's all there in the painting.
And it's travelling the country, isn't it?
It's travelling the country. We want the nation to see the nation's paintings. So we're travelling to different festivals, to Buxton, to Grassington, Hay, and also to Latitude. So wanting to get the paintings out and have them appreciated and enjoyed by as many people as possible.
Thanks to Linda Bolton. And if the Titian experience has given you an itch to see the real thing, don't forget the National Gallery contains one of the most extensive collections in the world of works by the great Italian artist. We're open 10 till 6 daily and till 9 on Fridays, or you can get a closer look at all the paintings online at www.nationalgallery.org.uk. That's it for this episode. Until next month, goodbye.